And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, where we are one day from the 10-year anniversary somehow of the decision. And I am thrilled to have one of my favorite players I've ever covered on the podcast today to talk about that and a million other things. 11-time NBA All-Star, 11, two-time NBA champion, future Hall of Famer, one-time Battyoki karaoke champion, the great Chris Bosh. How are you?
Hey, man, I'm good. I'm glad you put that last one in, man. That's an important one.
Well, if people haven't seen the clip of your Barry White performance from Battyoki, you went all out for that thing, and you deserved the Battyoki throne.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, man.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. You know, no complaints regarding the circumstances with everything that's going on in our country. It's crazy times, but necessary times. And, you know, the whole, you know, the pandemic thing is just still going. And I hope people out there are being safe. We're trying our best to be safe and try to have, you know, go on with our summer and stuff like that. But regarding everything, everybody's happy and healthy in my family. You know, I have no complaints, man.
Good. And I should mention right off the top, you just started a new subscriber newsletter on Substack called The Last Chip that is going to give us some behind the scenes insight into the last championship that Miami Heat won with you. And that's 2013, the epic 7-game series over the Spurs. You might remember a rebound and a block shot, among other things that Chris contributed to that series. You've done two entries for that. It has been spectacular so far. We're going to get into that, but everyone should subscribe to that. It's going to be really good. And
please.
I'm excited you decided to do that. So let's just start. Let's just go do some Heat stuff. Recently, you were on an Instagram with, I believe, Jason Jackson, Jax, in which you kind of hinted at, you almost hinted that you think maybe your Heat teams are overall perhaps a slight disappointment. You said the Warriors have become a better dynasty than you guys were, and you compared your Heat team to the UK band Cream with Eric Clapton instead of I think the Beatles, from which you derive the Heatles nickname, which I always hated, but that's a different story. So yeah. let's just start there. Four straight finals, two championships, then it breaks up. Did you mean to imply that it was a disappointment? Are you disappointed in it?
No, I didn't mean to imply that I was disappointed or that it I did not mean to imply that it was a disappointment. You know, the point I was trying to get across and you know, to be quite honest, you know, as a player at one point in time, I was a little envious, you know, the Warriors, you know, they get one have a 2-year battle with the Cavs, and then boom, they go get KD, they re-up and you know, they have a lot of people feel certain ways about that. At the end of the day, their team got stronger and they continued their quest for championships. That was the disappointment for me, that it all just really stopped. And in that span of 4 years, it's tough to you always kind of say what would have been, because usually, you know, hopefully teams will get more than a 4-year crack at it. Usually if it's a 4-year run, you know, that team was probably knocking at the door for so long and they finally just blew it up. You know, maybe Eastern Conference, maybe a finals. They don't win it. It disbands. And, you know, that was just, you know, pretty much the point I was trying to get at. I know it was, you know, a bunch of different reasons why we didn't go past that 4 years. But, you know, just me looking back on it. And at the time, I would have, you know, liked to have continued that run.
Let me just throw this at you. Is it as simple, it's never this simple, but is it as simple as if Dwayne's knees hadn't been deteriorating to the point that they were deteriorating to in 2014, if he can still be Dwayne Wade, like the way we knew Dwayne Wade, for 2 or 3 more seasons, do you think it all stays together further? Is it that simple?
I think that's a very, very interesting point. And even if it did, in the last year that I played, I felt that we were strong enough to compete for a championship. We weren't there, but I knew that we could make the playoffs. we can make a statement. And, you know, if you get there, I mean, once you're in there, we've got experience. We had, you know, veteran leadership and stuff like that. And, you know, with Dwayne, if he was able, you know, to move, you know, that was such a big part of his game. That slowed him down a bit. He was still giving all-star efforts every year. So if he would have been, you know, not having as much knee troubles as he did, I mean, that's a whole other conversation. But, you know, athletes and playing the way that Dwayne played at the level that he played, I mean, shoot, man, sometimes the knees just something your body eventually gives out on you, and it's nothing you can do. I mean, he fought through so much pain just getting to where he got to. You know, that was just that was amazing to me just by itself, you know.
Well, I was just rewatching a few days ago game 7 from the 2013 finals against the Spurs, the game you win.
Yeah.
And I remember Dwayne in those playoffs was really up and down. Yeah. And had a couple of rough games against the Spurs and clearly just like was not the burst wasn't there. Yeah. But in that game, man. In game 7, I had forgotten about it because it was there, and it wasn't just he was making mid-range jump shots. It was you guys double the pick and roll. Tim catches the ball near the rim, and there's Dwayne going up to disrupt shots. And, like, whatever he had to do in that game, watching it 7 years later was like, man, that is an all-time gutty performance.
Nah, for sure. You kind of forget the performances that players have over the years, you know, as we get further removed. Even when you look at it, because you expect Dwayne to come through. You expect LeBron to come through. You expect the whole team, myself included, to come through. And that kind of, you know, that can kind of jade people at the time. and then looking back, just like you were saying, at the game 7, really at the whole series, it was so up and down. But when it was time to answer the call, he did every single time. I mean, not only in those, you know, not only in that series, but if you go backwards and look at every series he's played in, you know, he came up big.
Yeah, he was and he comes up big in every different way. Block shots, rebounds. There's a possession in that game where he gets like 3 offensive rebounds in a row, and it ends. gutsy
little
plays.
Stuff, man. Yeah, little stuff like that, man.
Little stuff that's not little. You know, we call it little stuff because it's not scoring. That's what we call everything that's not points is like little stuff. But it's not little stuff.
Yeah, you got to say that so people understand it. Like little stuff. Oh yeah. It's like Chris, you got to do the little stuff. I don't, you know. Okay.
So you had to do a lot more of the little stuff when you switched from, as you called him, CB4 in Toronto to Miami. So just take me back, refresh my memory. Where did you watch the decision? Were you with Dwayne?
No, he was, I forgot where Dwayne was. I was at Mr. Chow.
And who were you with?
I was with my girlfriend, who was my wife. She was my girlfriend at the time. My best friend, my publicist, and we pretty much curated like a social dinner to kind of get established in Miami. We hit the ground running. And so we put together this dinner, and at the end, we all went in the back room and watched the decision. They rolled in a TV for us and everything.
Okay, so did you know? Because all the reporting about this is like, the Heat kind of knew, but then LeBron went silent for a while and there was like, uh-oh, is something going on here? But Dwayne probably knew. So did you, you're watching, do you know the words Miami or South Beach are going to come out of his mouth?
I knew but didn't know, if that makes any sense. You know what I'm saying? So really, and you know, you can speculate, you can do all these things, but yeah, I mean, LeBron, his decision, he's going to have to make it at the end of the day. And I mean, I think I think Dwayne and I announced either the day before, it was the day before. So, you know, I had my own things. I was, you know, just getting in Miami, kind of having this, seeing the whole change and how the anticipation is building. And then you get caught up in all that stuff. I had Bron's number, but he wasn't answering. I'm sure there was a serious, tremendous amount of pressure on him. And especially with the prime time, you know, special coming up. I mean, it was crazy. So we found ourselves sitting and hoping he was going to make the move to Miami just like everybody else, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? Because me and you can have a conversation where I can tell you, yeah, I'm going to be there at 8 o'clock. If it's 7:59, you're going to be like, okay, I mean, you know, okay, you still coming, you know, that's just like an analogy. But, you know, me and Dwayne, we came, we figured, hey, this is, you know, this could happen. And then you start watching the television show.
Now, did you all hang out that night when LeBron flew down there, or did you not see him till the next day?
Man, I don't think I saw him till the next day. You know, it was pretty much pandemonium, really, to be honest with you. What's the name of the hotel?
There's a lot of nice hotels in Miami.
Yeah, it was the one with Mr. Chaz connected to it. I can't believe I'm not, it's slipping my mind right now. Anyway, that's where we were staying. And, you know, cameras started pulling up and it was people all along the street, across the street. I mean, I had never seen that many cameras. And, you know, for me coming from Toronto, you know, prime time in Toronto is pretty cool. This was different though, you know, and I'm kind of just playing catch up the whole time. So I don't believe I saw him till the next day.
I always wonder this, if LeBron calls you on July 5th or July 6th, he's like, you know what? I can't do it. I got to stay in Cleveland. You know, my heart's here. What is your plan B? Is your plan B just you and Dwayne in Miami? Did you have a, like,
what, oh yeah. I mean, I always, you know, I had been not looking at Miami. That's the wrong thing to say. But Miami already had the championship fervor, obviously, right? And teaming up with another great player was already something I was looking towards doing. And, you know, being a dynamic 1-2 punch, you know, even if, yeah, if Brian had of, you know, stayed in Cleveland or went somewhere else, it just, you know, I mean, we would have still had cap space. And one thing you know about Pat Riley, okay, great. Plan B is, yeah. Yeah. And I still think we would have had a strong team. And,
oh, for sure.
You know, CS still would have had our crack at championships.
Let's go year by year. 2011, everyone hates you guys. You're the most hated. People think like Kevin Durant had it rough his first year in Golden State. Yeah. Those people must not remember what 2011
yeah, it was okay.
Dallas beat you guys. People always say you lose in the finals. How about we give Dallas a little credit? Dallas beat you guys in the finals.
Dallas beat us, yeah. Give them credit. I mean, come on, Rick Carlisle, Jason Kidd, you know, Dirk Nowitzki, you know, those are future Hall of Fame guys, and they had a very, very organized, complete team, and they had a plan, and they took us out of our game. They played a tremendous series.
And at the same time, that was clearly a series, and I think the only series in LeBron's career where he just wasn't himself. He just wasn't mentally there. He's talked about it. It just wasn't LeBron James. It would just even in LeBron's quote unquote below average games, normally he's still attacking the rim. He's still being LeBron. He's just missing shots, which happens to everybody. That was not LeBron. So I wonder, without revealing too much, have you ever had a heart to heart with him about like what happened? Like what were you going through? What was that series about? Or did you have it right after that season?
No, we had a couple moments while it was going on. And afterwards, you know, everybody deals with the disappointment. I mean, and after that, I know everybody crawled into their hole, but then we reconnected when I got married. I got married that summer. So that gave me the chance to, okay, you know, I knew I needed to change my focus and be happy because it was a great event. You know,
I heard it. I heard it was a hell of a wedding. I remember the best
wedding Miami's ever seen. Man. But you know, I put all my focus and my energy into that, and then when that came back around, that was I believe that was the first time we were all together again, and everybody was dancing and having fun and joking. And at least for me, I felt that for me, that was like the springboard to get back on the horse. Now, we still had the lockout to deal with, but that got us back into it and back connected and back, you know, knowing that we're human and, hey, man, we're disappointed, but yo, let's move on and let's get better. You know what I'm saying?
You know that instant confidence boost you get from an outfit that makes you look really good. That's what you'll get with Stitch Fix. With Stitch Fix, you get a stylist who understands your style, size, and budget, and they do all the shopping for you. It's the easiest way to update your wardrobe this season. You got to update your wardrobe for every season. Even I know that. Just give the stylist your size, style, and budget preferences. Order boxes when you want, how you want, no subscription required. And they send 5 just for you pieces, plus outfit recommendations and pro styling advice. You keep what works and then send back the rest. Your stylist sends just right pieces and the fit is always on point. It's like they have style ESP. You'll be shocked at how they do it. Stitch Fix makes it all so easy. If you don't like to shop, they save you all the time and effort. That sounds great to me. Plus, you get outfits that make you look really good and feel really good. And if you don't love something, you just send it back. Shipping, returns, exchanges, all free. Style that makes you feel as good as you look. Get started today at stitchfix.com/low. That's stitchfix.com/low, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast, stitchfix.com/low.
The Low Post fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite The Low Post episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like First Take and Pardon the Interruption ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/low. That's amazon.com/low to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
2012, you get hurt in game one of the second round against the Pacers, and a painful injury. That injury, you tore an abductor muscle or whatever it's called. That hurts.
Tore an abductor. That hurts.
You missed the rest. You guys go down 2-1 to the Pacers.
Yeah.
The next round, you're down 3-2 to Boston, and people forget. I just think like it's sort of glossed over the fact that you didn't play in any of those games. Like it's a big part of the team is missing.
Sure.
You come back for game 5 against the Celtics, 2-2. You come off the bench. You only play 13-14 minutes. Boston beats you in Miami to go up 3-2.
Yeah.
Paul hits a three in the last minute. He's talking all kinds of junk and everybody's
Oh, man. It's everybody but this guy. Does he hit that? And that's classic Paul. I mean, that's playoff basketball. It comes down to getting a stop and scoring. And, I mean, we're down 1 point. You know, we got Bron switched out on Paul. We like our chances. We like this matchup. And I remember he hit that shot, and we were just like, damn. I know, you know, for me, in my head, I come back, game 5, boom, we put their backs against the wall. It is what it is. And I remember as soon as he hit that shot, you know, it's like, okay, we're going to lose. It's not much time on the clock.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man, this wasn't supposed to happen like this, and you know we just had to deal with it.
So I want to focus in on that moment because you go down 3-2 and you're going to Boston for game 6, and at that point the vultures are circling. At that point, if you guys don't win 2 years in a row, you don't even get to the finals for the second year.
Oh, it's over.
I don't know. Do you think it's over?
Yeah, for sure, it's over. It's nothing to talk about. I mean, you know, our goal is to win a championship, and okay, you get there. You don't win it, and then you don't even get to the dance the next time. You don't even get to the show. Like, I mean, come on, you're a fan and historian of basketball. You know the stories. that's not even it wasn't even an experiment. It just didn't work, and let's just figure it out, man.
So all the higher ups swear we don't know. We're not sure. We think we probably would have kept everyone together. I think you just don't know what would have – I think if you guys had lost, the level of hysteria would have been so much that I wonder if they just would have had to do something because it just would have been too much noise.
Yeah, you know how. I mean, come on. That would have been the whole summer. you know, it would have been nothing else to talk about. And you know, let's say the Celtics did play OKC. Okay. The champion gets crowned. All right, back to Miami. What's going to happen? They blew it.
No. That would have been – we wouldn't even have gone back to Miami. We would have been on Miami the entire time.
You just would have been there the whole time.
I want you to take me back. So you lose that game five.
Mm-hmm.
You're still coming back from injury. From what I recall, you came back way earlier than you would have had this not been the playoffs. And probably
It was the season, it probably would have been like 2 months or something like
that. But, and instead it was 2.5 weeks or something.
It was 3 weeks to the day.
So you're probably hurting, right? It probably doesn't feel great to play.
It hurt. Yeah, it hurt like hell.
So take me back, and you're still coming off the bench for the rest of that Boston series. And in fact, I think not until game two of the finals do you start again.
Yeah.
So you're coming off the bench, which is weird, and you're hurting, which is weird. Tell me what you remember either from the flight to Boston or the off day in Boston, like with the team maybe on the line and you're injured in this weird situation. Like, is there a conversation? Is there a moment? Is there a dinner? Is there something from that 36 hours that sticks out to you?
No, you just, at that point, you just kind of fall into what you've always been doing. You don't deviate from any plans. You don't, you know, you don't try to reinvent the wheel. You don't do anything. You do what you've been doing. The night before, my best friend, and Roni Turioff, we all went to dinner. And the funniest thing was we went to the same place. It's like we were fighting superstition, right? I'm like, this is good food. We're going to the same place. These are my buddies here. We sit down, right? And they give us the menus and we sit at the same table. And I already feel kind of a certain way. After about 2 minutes, Roni was like, yo, man, can we move? I said, hell yeah, let's move. Let's move. Let's just get up and move tables. And so we sat down. That's all I really remember about that night. And I mean, everything was just, you prepare for the game. You go through it. You feel the pressure. But you know, there's a build up to the game. You go through the motions and, you know, get out there and play.
And you end up winning. Obviously, LeBron plays what I think is the most consequential game of his life. And then you beat Boston in game seven. You win the finals. You're champions. Mm-hmm. In the latest issue of your newsletter, The Last Chip, which, again, everyone should subscribe to, you tell a great story that I had never heard before that I wonder if you can tell it a little bit here of – kind of, you know, you guys go out and party. Everyone's all partying. Everyone parties. You go on a 2-week vacation with your wife.
Yeah.
And you think everyone's going to be on vacation. All the Heat are going to be on vacation. We're all going to be on vacation. We're all going to relax. You come back, go to the practice facility, and discover that someone actually has not been relaxing. Tell that story.
We wasn't even at the practice facility. I want to say I can't remember where it was. It was some function. And I believe it was in Miami, but I was about to go to LA. I had just got back. And, you know, even when I was on vacation, I would like hit the bike, you know, do some workout stuff the season just ended. But, you know, you automatically start thinking, OK, don't get out of shape. Let me just hit the weights a little bit. And so I'm doing that little bit thinking like, OK, yeah, this is good. And, you know, me and Brian, we're at some event. I can't remember what it was, but I see him. We strike up a conversation, and yeah, he had been saying, oh, he was talking about his post game and talking about his improvements and stuff like that. And I was like, oh yeah, word, okay, yeah. That's what's up. Me too. And you know, on top of that, you're gonna have Pat and Spo hitting you up like, yo. I mean, it's not even a vacation. I can say it's just like, it's right back to it. You know, you have the parade 2-3 weeks and then the phones start ringing again. And even before that, Brian is talking about how much better he is in the post. I'm like, first of all, you can't even, I mean, how did you work that much on your post game? Yeah. You haven't even been off that long. And then, you know, you're telling me about your improvements. I'm just trying to, you know, get my growing better. You know what I mean?
Well, it's funny, you know, speaking of everyone changing their game, like you've talked a lot about becoming a stretch five and a 3-point shooter. Like I also went back and watched one of the games from the Dallas series. And it's like astonishing how different you guys looked in that series. And like, I knew it. I watched all the series. Like, I knew the evolution. But like, even when you're Joel Anthony's rolling to the rim and you're spacing the floor, in that series, you're spacing to like 16 feet. You're just hanging around the elbows. Like, it's so crazy how that those 7 feet is such a journey for a guy like you, for a big man who's accustomed to playing a certain way, that even when you don't have the ball in 2011, your natural habitat is 15, 16 feet, which is not really spacing at all when you think about it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that was one of the things looking back on. I'm sure we all look back on it, but that's the way the game was played.
Yeah.
For me, that's one of the things I wish I would have done, and I think we could have been even more effective earlier if I would have figured out how to, you know, those 7 feet, step back and really be a three-point threat early on, and then learn that catch and go around the basket, you know, get to the rim and still be effective. It would have worked better in the offense, and it would have allowed me to function with no plays, you know, and I could have been myself in the scheme of things. And, you know, Brian, the majority is going to run through them. But when they get off the ball, you know, that's when I can really function. I wish I would have made that step back earlier and really stay consistent with it, too, because even that year I didn't. But the next year I did. But I didn't really fall into it. I really, really could have just embraced it a lot more.
I was looking at your numbers. You barely shot threes even the year you won the first title. But game 7 against the Celtics, you made threes, which was huge. And someone had told me when you started to be able to shoot again after tearing your muscle, one of the things you did was shoot a lot of threes during that hiatus to prepare for, you know, maybe I can't get all the way to the rim, but I got to be able to shoot threes. And like, it paid off in that game.
It did. And I mean, you know, it's just building the confidence too, because I had been shooting them. And it's like, okay, now this is a time where I can really just get used to it. But then you have to get used to it in the games. Because one thing that's funny about the pros, nobody's going to say, hey, shoot threes. And then when you get out there, no, Chris, it's supposed to be a three. You got to figure things out for yourself, you know? And it was still fighting my comfort zone. I was comfortable attacking, getting the ball 15, 16, 17 feet, really working off of one-on-one matchups. But that wasn't. I had to, you know, learn a different facet of the game. And I just wish I would have, you know, it didn't matter. I mean, we still, you know, won different things. But just as a mental challenge, I would have liked to have seen myself really, really embrace that three ball and shoot 5 threes a game starting in 2012. You know what I'm saying?
2013, you win again. Now, when I look back at all the tough playoff series that you had, because everyone expected you guys to be this unbeatable juggernaut when you formed. And that was never every year you're pushed.
Mm-hmm.
2011, you don't win. 2012, Pacers Celtics push you.
Mm.
2013 and 14, those Spurs teams are just all-time great teams.
And you can't forget those bar fight with the Bulls, man.
Those bar fights in the first year. But the one series, and again, you're out in 2012 for most of the Pacers and Celtics series. The 2013 Pacers, that's the series I look at, and I'm like, I understand conceptually why that team was such a good matchup for you guys. Mm-hmm. But like, you look at their numbers, like they were a 49 win team. They weren't like that great of a team. So why in that one year when you were fully healthy, why were they so tough for you? Why were you able to push you guys all the way to game 7?
Well, I mean, it was contrasting styles. We were going to play the tough, grinded out defensive type of game, but we wanted to speed it up at the same time. They wanted to play the tough, grinded out game, and they wanted to play it slowly. So some worlds we matched. And I think, you know, just the way the styles were played, it was a good matchup, you know. They were a tough team. They defended home court very well. They had guys who could stretch the floor, like, you know, George Hill, Paul George, you know, him being the superstar that he was trying to be and he eventually became. You know, it just kind of added those dynamics to, and you know, let's be frank, they didn't like us and we didn't like them. You know, it was a rivalry. It was on, and that just sometimes it just sparks for just a good old slugfest. And you know, for us, we were trying to figure out their chess game of how to, you know, one, beat them in the half court. If it does turn into a game, half court game, how can we, you know, still beat those guys? And, you know, just whatever it takes, you know. And we we eventually got to some points. I don't think we played the best series either, but, you know, we still were able to get
game seven. Game seven, you rolled them in Miami. I chuckled. Speaking of 2013, I chuckled when you said the year before Paul Pierce hits that shot with like 50 something seconds left, and you think, well, we're probably going to lose. And I thought to myself, well, it's a good thing they didn't think that the next year in 2013 when the Spurs were up five with like 25 seconds left and Miami had the ball. Because if you had that attitude then, I'm not sure you get the rebound and the Ray Allen three and all that stuff. Because think about that playoffs, that whole run from game one against the Pacers where LeBron hits the buzzer beater and they take Hibbert out of the game to the Spurs then take Duncan out of the game and you get the rebound. I mean, that is an all-time crazy playoffs. But it's a good thing you didn't give up in that game.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just different. It's different, you know, circumstances, right? If you know, I guess it's a different mind frame. And was it 50 seconds left when Paul hit that shot?
52.9, if I recall correctly.
It felt like it was 2.9 seconds when he hit it. Okay, so let me rephrase that. I guess maybe this was my thought process after. Maybe we didn't score coming back, and maybe that was the thought. But, you know, when you know you have another game to play, it's a different, you know, kind of mentality. Yeah, when the finals, this was it, you know, and one of the things we had to get over quickly was that initial shock of, holy shit, what just happened?
Yeah.
You know, and you go from being in control to a certain extent to, well, you know, what just happened? And you got to gather your thoughts and people are leaving the arena, you know, and, you know, fighting those notions of those old memories that want to show up and say, oh, man, remember that time you lost in this exact same arena like 2 years before? So it was kind of, you know, putting things to the side and not letting your mind kind of just wander and, you know, break it down to focusing one thing at a time.
You obviously – can you picture that rebound like clear as day when you close your eyes? And did you know where Ray wrote, like when the ball's in the air, do you already know where you're going with it?
No. He was the first person I saw. So in my mind, it happened very slowly. Even in my experience now, if I close my eyes and just experience it, it was very slow. Looking at it on TV or replays, it does not feel like that to me. You know, so to me, in my mind, he was the first person I saw. Now, granted, we always, you know, that was like a point of emphasis to say, all right, well, offensive rebound, you look for the three-point shooter. That's, you know, your highest three-point bucket to get. And just naturally, he called my name. You know, he called me. And I asked him, we talked about it. Like, yo, did you call my name? He said, oh, hell yeah, I called you. So, you know, to me, I grabbed it. I felt the nudge, and then you know, I saw Manu, and then Ray, you know, was right there calling me, backing up. So I just passed to him. Now, in the thing, it was pretty instantaneous.
Yeah. Watching it now, mind, it's a bam, bam.
Yeah, but in my mind, it felt like, oh, watch the flight of the ball. Anytime as a rebounder, you watch the flight of the ball, you can anticipate where it's going. You know, when I grab it, that nudge, I feel Manu. It did not feel like – it just felt like somebody tapping me on my shoulder. That made me look down at him, and he was down, and then Ray was backing up with his eyes big as hell, you know, so.
Passing. And the rest is history.
Yeah.
I forgot to ask you about the story. I wonder if you remember this. I asked Spo. I called Spo. I said, look, Chris has come on my podcast. Give me a story. Give me a story that, like, tells me about what Chris was like as a guided coach. I wonder if you remember this. I'm not sure if it was 2012 or 2013, but it's during one of the Pacers series, at least according to Spo's memory. Mm-hmm. And I think it's in Indiana because he mentioned a hotel. You guys lose. Tough game. You're in the middle of a brutal series, just like lost. It just eats at you. And he's like, Chris shows up in my hotel room with like a six pack And yeah. we just start crushing beers, not talking about basketball, not talking about the game. He just, it was just me and Chris, and he just knew what to do. He just showed up in my room, said, "Here, let's drink some beer." Do you remember that?
We actually did watch film.
Oh, you watched a little film?
We did watch. We watched the game over because we were getting crushed on the short roll.
Ah. They were good at that. The Pacers were good at that. David West.
Very, very good at that. Yeah, and they won game one. Or they beat, I can't remember the instance, but yeah, I don't know which game it was. They beat us in Indiana, and I remember just that short row just crushing us, man. And so my wife and I, we were talking after the game, and, you know, we said, okay, you know, she's like, yo, you should just like go up there and like just talk it out. Cause I'm just like, what are we doing? You know, I don't know what we're doing. This is just, you know, we're just sometimes in the series, you just got to figure it out. Right. And, yeah, I just went, got a six pack and yeah, I went, knocked on his door and, you know, yeah, we started out just talking and, you know, just trying to figure things out. And then, you know, yeah, then we watched some film and just was like, yeah, we just talked about it and what he was thinking about and what I was thinking about and how we can do a little bit better of a job. But yeah, I was just trying to, you know, reach out and figure some things out because sometimes, you know, it can kind of get stiff and weird if yeah. you don't, you know, just talk about, you know, problems that are happening, you know, because we got to figure these things out in real time. So it's funny he remembers that. I haven't thought about that one in a while.
Fizz told me another one. Coach Fizdale said, you know, I don't think a lot of people know how respected Chris's voice was within the team, particularly mm-hmm. after we had been together for a couple of years. And it wasn't just like Chris could get on Mario Chalmers or Birdman or whoever, one of the bench guys. Chris would get on everyone. I said, what do you mean? He said, I remember we were playing the Knicks one game. Not sure it was – you remember this? Yeah. It's like we were playing the Knicks one game, and, like, they were killing us on the pick and roll. And it was because the low man in our defense, the guy who's supposed to come protect the rim when we trap, wasn't coming to protect the rim. And I said, who's the low man? He said, well, it was LeBron that game. And we got into a huddle. And Chris lit into LeBron and said, yo, you're the low man. Where the hell are you? And we're all sitting there like, oh. Okay, listen. And Fizz is telling LeBron, kind of looked and was like, if Chris Bosh is telling me this, Chris is right. I gotta do better. Do you remember this?
Yeah, I remember that one. They were running this side screen and roll on the right side of the court in transition. And they were putting Amari in it. If I remember correctly, they sounds were putting right. Amari in it, but they had Tyson lift it.
Uh-huh.
And that was like the wrinkle they were throwing in the game, but it was happening quick. I think they scored like three times in a row, right? And so we kind of I knew this play was coming, and so I knew who the low man is. So if it's a dunk, I'm gonna look back and see who's there. Like, okay, it happens again. You look back again, like, okay, you start recording stuff. And, you know, I took pride in the defense and, you know, I wanted us to just be, that's where I felt I really had a voice. And, you know, with LeBron and Dwayne, I wanted to challenge those guys. You know, I wanted to, that's the type of player I grew up playing, you know, you had to be very aggressive and you had to speak your mind. Or otherwise, you wouldn't get any respect for your team from your teammates or whoever is watching the games, you know. So you had to be passionate and you had to be intense, you know. So I always loved playing that style and I wanted them to know it was important to me. And usually, I mean, you say something to them, even if it pisses them off, I hope they got mad because then they go off and, there like, you know, score 40 points in a row or something crazy and just – you know, those things would happen, but it was, you know, that was a fun one. It was funny. I think Brian was mad at me for a little bit. It didn't come out of nowhere, but just, you know, sometimes with LeBron, you know, I wanted to challenge him. Like, man, we've been knowing each other since we was teenagers. You know, I respect him too much to, you know, let him slide. And then shit after that, please believe he got on my case plenty of times too. You know?
I believe it.
Yeah.
Can we do some Toronto stuff?
Of course.
you get drafted to the Raptors and Vince Carter's on the team. Now, a lot of young guys, they come in, even stars like you, and you're an all-star by your third year in the league. You kind of think like, you know, I'm a Raptor. I'm going to be on, like, even though you see it, you don't get a sense of like, I could move around a lot in my career. I'm going to be with one team for a while, blah, blah. How shocking was it for you as a young player? Or what do you remember to see Vince Carter get traded? Like Vince Carter. Now, obviously he was not unhappy about being traded and there was a lot of stuff that went on leading up to it.
Yeah.
But was it a wake up call? Was it surprising to see a guy of that stature get traded?
It wasn't surprising. We knew it was coming. But still when it happens, it's still kind of like, damn. But with me, you know, it was known kind of, he was already in that position. It was known he wanted to trade the pick, you know, before I got there because they wanted to get right back on to where they were 2 years before that and start competing in the playoffs again. So naturally, I totally understand that. But, you know, I'm pretty good, right? And so, you know, it was kind of a letdown that year. We missed the playoffs. And then, you know, the next year.
You mean Vince wanted them to trade the pick that became you?
Yeah, that became me.
To get veteran help. I got you.
To get right back on, make that trade, boom. And, you know, I came. Okay. And the season never really. We made a trade for Jalen and Danielle and tried to save the season. It just didn't happen, you know. And then the next year, you know, it was, you know, you could tell it was imminent. It was coming. And then, you know, when it happened fairly early. You know, once it happened, it was more so just dealing with him. And, he, you know, he was my friend. I considered him a friend as well. But like watching, you know, him go off, you know, I'm like, damn, okay, I have to grow up early. You know, we get right to it. Our superstar is gone. But at the same time, I have a shot to really prove myself as a franchise player, even if I'm 20 years old, you know, that's how I saw it as. I was, you know, a young gunner trying to prove himself. You know, I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to be up there on the threshold with Carmelo and LeBron because I felt like, damn, I'm pretty good too. You know, I'm out here doing things too. And then that was my time to kind of say, okay, well, I'm a franchise player. There's no doubt about it, at least in my brain. You know,
I was looking to go all the way to the end of your Toronto tenure. I was looking back at your last season there, and I had forgotten this. You guys were in position to make the playoffs, and at one point you were like 6 or 7 games over 500. You guys had like a little frisky young team.
Yeah.
And then in Cleveland, with about 3 weeks left to go into season, Anton Jameson catches you in the face with an elbow and just breaks your whole damn face.
Yeah.
And you guys missed the rest of the season, like 10 games or something like that. And you missed the playoffs by one game.
Yeah.
So you obviously remember this.
Yeah.
So first of all, that injury, from what I was reading about it and heard about it, that sounds like one of those injuries. Like, yeah, Chris missed a couple weeks, but that sounds like hell. Reading about it reminded me of when Mike Conley got his face broken and he couldn't like be in, he couldn't like look at lights. And so it was horrible.
Sure,
right?
Bro. Yeah. It's awful, man. That was definitely some of the worst pain I've experienced. The messed up part about it is like, you know, freak accident, he cracks me. So what it ended up happening, I had a fractured nasal passage and a fractured orbital socket too.
Oh.
You know, so they have to keep you at the arena to do a CT scan before they can send you to the hospital. So that time just waiting at the arena was just agonizing. And so then when they drove me to the hospital, they're driving probably like 15 miles an hour. I'm like, yo, dude, slow this car down, man.
Really?
Yeah, I couldn't. I mean, I was just nauseous to my stomach. Eventually, they get you to the hospital. They got me to the hospital, you know, gave me some of the good stuff. And I was able to settle down. And, you know, that's when they told me, okay, tomorrow you need surgery. It was pretty, just like, yeah, you're going to do surgery. Yeah, you're going to stay over. You got to stay here 2 nights and then you can go back to Toronto. And they stuffed my nose with packing, you know, and so I think 2-3 weeks after that, I got to take it out once I was healed. But, you know, I thought it was like this. They pull it out. The packing probably is almost a foot long.
Yeah, it's crazy,
you know, and that was painful taking it out.
Ugh.
But yeah, it kind of landed listlessly in Toronto. I wanted to give so much more if this was going to be it. I wanted to do so much more and, yeah, make the playoffs. And everybody sees how electrifying the playoffs is, you know, in Toronto. That was like one of the most disappointing things in my career was not experiencing more playoffs in Toronto. But that happened, and I got that. I remember I got the packing out in the last game that night was happening, and it was just a crazy, crazy time, man.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes! Catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's there up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, watch out for them. You name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So here's my theory. Here's my conspiracy theory. You ready?
Yeah.
You're going to debunk this, but I don't care if you debunk it. It's still LeBron, so this happened in Cleveland. You broke your face. You're about to make the playoffs. My conspiracy theory is this. LeBron is worried if Toronto makes the playoffs and like has a little bit of a run, Chris is going to reconsider. So we need someone on the team to go hurt Chris to make sure. So I think LeBron ordered the code red, and this is all a Kaiser Soze conspiracy theory, and that's what happened. That's my theory.
Nah, it was too, man. If you watch the replay, it's just like
I don't want to watch the replay. I don't want evidence.
It's not one of these where the dirty things. Watch it again. His arm, Anton Jameson's arm is like extended. He's extended. It's kind of like he's swatting like you backhanding somebody almost. And that's like the shape of his arm, right? And so he's like catching a pass that's like maybe outside of his range and he's got to go get it.
Gotcha.
I mean, you know, and it comes right across the bridge of my nose, man. It was crazy. And the worst part about that, too, was just the sedation and just laying in bed all day. I was in bed for maybe like a week and a half. Like, I couldn't move.
Ugh.
I was just, you know, pretty much you get up, take drugs, you know, get on the couch, watch a movie, go to sleep. Get up, take more drugs, get into bed. It's just bed to couch, bed to couch. It was terrible.
I think one of the coolest post LeBron Heat stories is, I believe you organized a team trip to Joshua Tree National Park in California, and then which is a wonderful idea and great team bonding, and you guys are out there in sleeping bags looking at the stars, and like that's the story fans want to hear. That's the story fans want to imagine professional sports is that just all the time in different cities. However, there was perhaps a near fatal animal attack during your visit to Joshua Tree. Please tell that story.
Yeah. So like, we're just hanging out, you know, having a couple beers. You know, Joshua Tree is a special place for me. It's a special place, period. And so I wanted to take them. And it was me, Dwayne, Hassan, UD, Gerald, Rio. I might be missing a couple guys. Oh, Josh McRoberts. I might be missing one or two more. I got to look at the pictures. But it was all of us for sure. I got a crib in LA. So we met there and we got some workouts in. The coaching staff and the guys were there too. And so we took a bus down. I rented a couple RVs and rented a house out there. And so it was just the players. And so, you know, I had a chef and, you know, we drove down there and we went hiking. And then that night, you know, the stars are incredible. And so we had sleeping bags and we put them all out on the we put them all out on the like little concrete. And so, you know, we're just looking up. D was the first one to be like, man, I can't see. So he put the sleeping bag down and just like looked up. I said, man, that's dope. And so we did that. I wanted, it was a porch light on. Mm-hmm. That was annoying. So I cut it off. And so eventually everybody's on the ground, just looking up on their sleeping bags, just looking up. Then like, it's like we had music playing. I think Rio was the DJ. And it's like a faint computer glow, you know, mm-hmm. on the porch a little bit. And all I heard was Hassan say, man, this is Scorpion. And, you know, I'm just kind of just, you know, reflecting on life and shit like that. You know what I mean?
And
I'm
here. And Hassan's a jokester, too.
Yeah. And it's like, man, yo, shut up, bro. No, I'm for real, man. He gets like some urgency. We stand up. We look. It's a Scorpion, probably, man. Size of my hand is what about, I don't know, at least like 4 or 5 inch Scorpion. Like, I mean, that sucker was huge. And so we turn on the light. I mean, we book it. We all just start running crazy, close the door. Everybody's laughing and having a good time. Our chef, the chef that I hired, I, you know, knew him. He went out there and went and caught him.
No
he
way.
Scorpion and put it in like in a little plastic container. And he was crazy. But just like, yeah, we were, you know, trying to team bond and look at the stars. And I guess, you know, that was pretty much the end to our night. You know what I mean? We just stayed in and played cards after that.
I haven't done my research on scorpions, but I'm pretty sure, like, can they kill you? They can do some damage. I don't some know what they can. They can do some
yeah.
damage.
Some of them can. But yeah, I mean, I had never seen a scorpion so big and athletic, you know?
A couple more and I'll let you go. You talked when Dwayne was retiring about the sort of poignancy of you called it of getting a last lap and you enjoyed watching Dwayne get to take his last lap. Mm-hmm. And you talked about then, you know, I may not get to do that or I may be deprived of that because of the blood clots. Mm-hmm. Obviously you have been deprived of that. Have you come to grips with that? Have you accepted that?
Oh, hell yeah. I've been accepted that. I look at those guys now and tell them, I don't know how you guys play, man. The bubble, you gotta go to the bubble. Woo.
Well, forget that. I'm just, you know.
But you know, yeah, I mean, just the having that ability, it made me realize how special it is, you know, to actually have that. You know, we're conditioning our minds to think that, oh, that's normal. That is not normal. It never happens, even for an athlete to know this is my last year doing what I love. And you can savor those moments and you can have the things you need to ride off into the sunset or whatever it is, you know. Oh, hell yeah, I had my grips. The way it ended for me, I mean, I said, well, I mean, that's kind of like a perfect thing. Like, it's no pressure. You just go out there. You went out there and play the game like you always do. And you know, that's a great thing. Okay. Injury happens. My guy, Josh McRoberts, we went through it at the same time. You know, unfortunately, injury after injury after injury is, you know, what can you do? He's, you know, a phenomenal talent that, you know, things happen, you know, but at the end of the day, he didn't get to finish his career like he thought he would. But nonetheless, 10-year career.
Yeah.
You know, you still get to do it. And those are the things to look at. And so for me, yeah, I've been accepted it, man. I'm at peace with it. I'm just glad I was able to look at those guys and say, oh, shit, man. Yeah, you get to, man, one more time around the league. That's such a special thing. And with Dirk, you know, he had one more year on his deal. He's like, this is it. And then he got to do what he wanted to do. What he announced that like what three days before the season was over or something?
Yeah,
like that?
He didn't want the fanfare. That's why he wanted to keep it quiet. I believe he didn't like Dwayne went to All-Star like a special honorary All-Star. I don't think Dirk, I'm pretty sure Dirk did not, because he didn't want to be involved with that.
I mean, hey man, you know, they get to do what they want, but having that last hoorah, that's a special thing. For me, hey, my career was it's in the bag and I'm proud of it.
Well, one of the cool stories that's happened for you is, so you're from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
You play the first part of your career in Toronto, seven years. You come to Miami. Miami is already Dwayne Wade's town, right? And LeBron James is LeBron James. He may be the greatest player ever. But you have become a Miamian. Miamian, is Miamian a thing? You have a home there still. You go to a lot of games there. And the city, just going to games when I'm there and I see the reaction to you, the city has really embraced your embrace of Miami. The city has really embraced you as you're one of us, because you came here and you stayed here. And seldom does that happen, because Miami wasn't even your first NBA home. You're not from there, but you've become part of Miami. Do you feel that? I mean, that seems unusual to me and not necessarily what I would have expected.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I always feel, you know, they've always made me feel welcome and home there. And going through all those things, I mean, I've experienced life, I've experienced death, you know, winning, losing, I've experienced everything in that city, you know, and just that alone and actually pulling through and seeing just the pride that people in Miami just have, you know, they're just like, yo, Miami, I've been season ticket holder since the first year, man. When Ronnie Cicely, you know who Ronnie Cicely is, you know, I get all of those stories. But yeah, I mean, we, you know, that's our home there. You know, of course we have a home here in Texas. You can have two homes.
Yeah.
And so that's like, that's the best part. I mean, when the basketball season is going, you know, I just love being in the mix and being in the city. You know, my kids love it, you know, and everybody's just great to me. And yeah, I mean, just having that no knack too. I mean, I love going to the games. That was something that's cool. I'm like, man, I go to people. Have you ever been to an NBA basketball game? It is a good time.
Turns out it's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, you know, and I know we don't know how it's going to go now, but in that tense, you know, I just, why not? Why not, you know, capitalize on, you know, what we've built there and just capitalize on the good people that are there, you know, and be a staple there. And I mean, people think I'm from Miami, you know, it's like, I have to remember now I'm from Texas, bro. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Bosh. I wanted it to be like that. I wanted it to be like, oh, there's Chris, you know, he's always here. I never wanted it to be this big, huge thing.
You won two titles in Miami, so you have two championship rings from your playing time there. The story goes, according to our Brian Windhorst, that you have a third Miami championship ring, a 2006 ring that Pat gave you during the free agency pitch and said, return this to me when you get your own. Yeah. But you have not returned it to him. So do you still have this?
Yeah, I have it.
you just have it? It's just they have a spare 2006 championship ring?
Well, I mean, I thought it was fascinating that he did that. You know, I don't know if it's real or not. I mean, it's a real replica. If it is a replica,
I would go get that investigated.
But yeah, I mean, he gave that to me in the free agency pitch. You know, like I say, Pat, man, come on, man, it's Pat Riley, man, and he gave me that championship ring. He had a bunch of them. But then he poured it out on the table and said, yeah, this is what it's about, goes through his whole shtick. And then at the end, he said, yo, just keep that. And that was just like just some boss shit, you know?
Yep.
He just gave it to me, yo, keep it. And I said, okay, I'm going to keep it. And I still have it. Yeah, I still have it.
I once had a player's agent, a good player's agent, tell me, I'm afraid of my guy getting in a room alone with Pat. Because all of a sudden he's going to be taking like a biannual exception deal to go play in Miami. Pat's going to give him. And I feel this. Pat's one of those guys. When you sit down and interview him, because of the aura and the history and all of that, you're like, yeah, this dude could talk me into anything. If this guy was like, let's go rob a bank right now. I'd be like, all right, what's my job? Am I the getaway driver?
Yeah, this is the thing. And then you know, this was and so my dad is going in to the free agency pitch with me. you know? So could you imagine that your dad is like, man, that's Pat Riley, man. I'm like, I know. Take it easy. Calm down, Dad. Yeah, you know what I mean? But they were, he was really excited. But yeah, he always has that aura. He's very aware of it. And just the things that the way he speaks to you is, I mean, the stories that he has are amazing. So he just has that fervor that you just can feel from cities away. You know what I mean? It's that strong.
When are you Hall of Fame eligible?
I've been Hall of Fame eligible. This is my first year this past year.
Okay. Well, you're going to get in. It's only a matter of time. But
yeah, it is a matter of time. I mean, you know, it's just been – this year has just sucked from top to bottom. You know what I mean?
This whole year can get out.
It's been what it is. Even if we were able to take in the guys this class, Kobe, him not being there, I mean, it's just – you know, it is what it is, man.
This was Kobe, KG, and Tim Duncan all together, right?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, what were you watching that game 7 between the Heat and the Spurs? You scored no points in that game. You've talked to me before about how halfway through that game you knew I'm not going to score any points. I just got to find other ways to contribute. One of the ways you contributed, which jumps out from watching it, is like those one-on-one battles against Tim in 2013 were fun. Man. No fun. And you held your own. Tim was first team all NBA that year. Tim could still get you buckets, and you were making him earn every inch. Was that cool though to defend Tim Duncan? I mean, for a guy from Texas, it must be like, damn, I'm going one on one with Tim Duncan.
Hell no, it wasn't cool. This is hardest shit I've ever done in my life, man. It's funny, and you mentioned that I watched the film. I'm giving up about 20, 30 pounds, right? He's a heavyweight playing down at light heavy. I'm a middleweight playing up at light heavy. You know what I'm saying? So, like, he had the size on me, but just every play down the court, man, he was hitting me. And nah, it wasn't no fun, man, because the way that Popovich and their system is designed, they knew that they had the size advantage on me. So they were always, the whole series, I was being put in positions I didn't want to be put in, you know, and guarding that dude, man. And that was kind of just like a moment of truth for me, because I knew I wasn't going to score. And if they put us in rotation, if I cannot guard this guy and we have to make the decision to put us in rotation, I mean, they had already been frying us from three.
Yeah.
And, you know, this was coming off of him having that spectacular game 6. He busted my ass in game 6, you know. So it was a lot, you know, it was a lot going on. But I was just like, I got him. It's okay. I got him straight up one-on-one. I know people were like, you got him. You got him. That's cool.
He had a good game that game. But you did get you held your own one on one, and some of the buckets he made, particularly in the fourth quarter, were hard.
Like, dude, he's damn near impossible to guard. You know what I mean? It's just like, man, I'm guarding him. I'm playing good D, but he gets that right shoulder soft Jimmy, light fadeaway, and it hits every part of the rim. He just got just that delicate baby touch around the rim, and he's hitting you in the chest. He elbows you in the face a lot. and it was just a battle, man. It was just like just trying to figure out how to get it done, man, and stop him just a little bit to you know, so Brian can bring us home.
Let's wrap with this. What should people know about The Last Chip? How often is it coming out? What's your goal? How long is it going to last? And I think it's $5. That's all it costs. $5 to give yourself some pandemic entertainment.
Yeah, $5. You can go to thelastchip.com or hit the links in my Instagram, my Twitter. One of the parts I love about it is the for right now, at least the first month, we're going to be donating to a Black Lives Matter called Color of Change. They're doing phenomenal work in educating people at a ground level on what needs to happen for actual change in America. You know, like going to your community centers, challenging mayors, police chiefs, you know, things of that nature, and really getting involved in the voting process. And we're going to, you know, I'm going to continue to you know, pick different charities to contribute to hopefully in the future. But the first month is proceeds are going to that. There is a free option as well. You know, we're going to be putting this thing out weekly. I mean, we've been working on it for a little while now. And I'm also working on a book, which I just handed into the editors. I'm really
very
excited about that. Yeah, thank you. Me and Ryan Holiday, we're working on a book called Letters to a Young Athlete. I hope that's going to be very good. But yeah, the last chip is just, you know, having fun with it, man. And I think it's stories people haven't heard before in my reflection. And, you know, giving props to the Last Dance and those guys, just seeing how they did and jumping in and out of these awesome stories. That's pretty much like one of the inspirations of this whole thing. So I'm very, very excited to see where it goes, man.
Well, any peek behind the curtain is so, you know, you guys are one of the most scrutinized teams in the history of pro sports, maybe the most scrutinized team in the history of American pro sports. But it sometimes is just like, when people, what people loved about The Last Dance, right, was the practice footage. Like more than anything else, like the stuff we don't get to see, it doesn't have to be super controversial. It doesn't have to be, you know, just the windows into the private life, whatever was left of the private life of a team like that. So the first two installments have been awesome. I look forward to more. I won't take up any more time. Chris Bosh, 11-time All-Star, 2-time champion. I miss watching you play, but I'm excited for all the stuff you're going to continue to do as a retired player. Congratulations on a great career. Congratulations on the book, the newsletter, all of that. And thank you for taking a little time today.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you, man.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.